You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by the Ducks Unlimited National Trip Auction. Dream trips for every interest and budget. Visit ducks.org/NTA to find your next adventure. Hey everybody, welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Dreeslein, happy to be with you for another week. We're going to have DNR Commissioner Sarah Strowman with us for a couple of segments, so stay tuned. You can listen to Sarah's take on some outdoor topics, natural resources topics. Les Meister will be here as usual to help us wrap it up, but let's kick it off with Tim Spielman, who survived the heat earlier this week, and we got into some more moderate temperatures, which was welcomed, huh, Tim?
Yeah, I'm sure we haven't seen the last of 90 and humid, but it's nice to catch a break and get some normal temperatures for at least a few days, even if there's a little bit of rain in the mix. Can always use that this time of year anyway.
Well, when I think of uber hot temperatures, Tim, I after years of reporting on Lake Mille Lacs, I start to think about hooking mortality. And by golly, this is a year where we're not all that worried about hooking mortality. You had a really good front page story showing that state anglers are well below their quota for the year. We had a more liberalized regulation on Mille Lacs this year. What, two fish, I believe? And what do we have, like 20% of the quota going into mid-July?
Yeah, about 20%. Actually, that would have been as of July 1, but as most people point out, there's just not a whole lot of fishing. Well, comparatively speaking, there's not a whole lot of fishing pressure compared to like the May opener until the end of June. So that'll tail off. I think the hooking mortality was so low, primarily because no one can, well, I shouldn't say that, because people are struggling to hook fish because the forage base is so good in the lake this year. And DNR folks will tell you that, and the resort folks will tell you that. And it's, I guess it's just a fact, you know, the fish that are being caught are big and fat and healthy, and that's all good. And there's a lot of fish in there. No one will deny that right now. But there's also a lot of perch and there are a lot of tulipies. So I think as of the end of June, the total kill was about 23,500 pounds of a 113,600 pound quota for state anglers. So yeah, 20.7 was actually where we were at as of that date. And to the point where the DNR is considering, and we'll probably know more by maybe a week from now, maybe a little bit longer, about regulations that allow for another walleye to be kept, because I don't think anyone believes that one extra walleye for the remainder of a season when fewer people are fishing and fishing is still tough is going to push that angler kill up substantially at all.
I mean, you hate to hear that harvest is this low. At the same time, at least it's not for terrible reasons. The reasoning is because there's a lot of food in the lake. There's a lot of forage, and that's, I guess, the sign of a healthy body of water. And the walleyes folks are catching, like you say, are fat and happy because they're well fed. So the talk, Tim, is to maybe increase to three fish, not mess with the slot. Is that kind of what you're hearing?
Yeah, and when we say not mess with the slot, it would remain at, if it does change, it would go to two fish, and it would be two between, well, all three could be between 17 and 20, or two could be between 17 and 20 with one over 20. And that's only if the commissioner's office agrees to it, because I talked to Brian Nurban this week, and he's the central region fisheries manager, and he indicated that they were going to get together at the commissioner's office and decide if they should proceed. And it sounded pretty likely, honestly, because they were talking about possibly four fish, but in all cases, they lean conservative when it comes to Mille Lacs. So my guess would be three if it does change.
Yeah, I mean, there's conservative, and then there's, come on. There's a certain percentage of fish that are caught, what, in the first three, four, 5 weeks on that lake that comprises a sizable chunk of all the fish taken during the year, right after opener. So, I mean, you could really liberalize the regulation up there and probably still keep harvest pretty low. Now, who knows? You know, you really liberalize that, you get a good spate of weather, you might get a lot of people out that really slay some fish. But right now, it seems highly unlikely they're going to come anywhere near their quota.
Yeah, I think part of it, too, was in Brad Urban alluded to it a little bit, and I wouldn't call it angler confusion. I haven't figured out what word it is, but it's when you jump from a catch and release last year to a two fish limit. Mm. And then if you were to go up to four now in mid August, and then for the winter season, go back to two, people probably go, what's going on here?
And then you alter the slot while you're at it. Yeah.
Which they normally do. But if you just slide it up to three, it's easier to explain than it would be if you went to four and then back down to say two for the winter season. So I think that's part of it as well.
I guess bottom line, some good news for anglers is we're probably looking at a liberalized slot on Lake Mille Lacs sometime this summer. Stay tuned to next week's Outdoor News, next week's Outdoor News Radio. Per Tim's comment, we probably will know more. One thing that jumped out at me, Tim, is I forget what the tribal harvest is. Was it 60, 70,000 pounds? It's triple what all the state anglers have taken so far. That kind of jumped out at me.
Yeah, 69,000, but they're not exactly relying on fish to bite. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's spearing in his gill net, so the fish don't really have a choice in the matter. Exactly. So yeah, their allocation this year was 88,000 pounds. So they were still quite a ways beneath it, but yet 69,000 pounds of walleyes this spring is, excuse me, their highest from 2012. So they had a good year.
All right. Like I say, we will know more next week. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline and Tim Spielman are kicking off this week's program, talking about wonderful native fish in north central Minnesota down to the southeast, where we've got aquatic invasive species, big ones you might call them, working their way up the Root River. We had some caught at the the confluence, the mouth of the Root River with the Mississippi, which is across from La Crosse, Wisconsin. Natalie Ryder reporting, they caught some upstream in the Root River now, huh?
Yeah, I think the bigger part of the story, obviously, is where they were found, the Root River. It all started a couple of weeks ago when they found, they were able to locate some fish they tagged. They were found in Pool 8. The effort took the people who were trying to catch these fish up the Root River, but they only got seven from what the DNR told Natalie, five silvers and two grass carp. But yeah, how far up the, I didn't have that in front of me, Rob, but how far?
Natalie reported 30 miles upstream from the confluence all the way up to Rushford. That's quite a ways up. As I was telling you off air, I spent quite a bit of time around the Root River fishing it near the Houston area. And then Rushford's another 10, 12 miles upstream. So that's a long way. I guess it jumped out at me, Tim. Do we have these things in any other inland river that far up?
I was just looking at the story. Funny you bring that up, because the examples the DNR provided of where carp have been found, these Asian carp, all the way to Granite Falls in the Minnesota River, which is a long way from the confluence with the other large rivers. So being not real familiar with the Root, I mean, I'm familiar with the Minnesota River. And that one, most of the year, is pretty slow and probably not a huge upstream battle for carp a lot of times in the Minnesota River.
Right.
I don't know if the Root's different from that, but yeah, that's Granite Falls, like I said, is a long ways from Mississippi.
Yeah. I've said before, to me, the Minnesota River looks a lot like the Illinois River. Now, we are farther north than the Illinois River. And I bring up the Illinois River because it's a disaster. It's just full of these jumping carp. And I sure hope the Minnesota River never looks that way. I hope we're just cold enough that they don't get quite as established.
Yep.
Before we go, Tim, Scott Rawl was an Outdoor News Person of the Year several years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. Nice story about him and the Nobles County chapter of PF on the front page of this week's Outdoor News.
Yeah, I don't know if it's an official accomplishment, but chapter Scott and the rest of his Nobles County chapter of Pheasants Forever say their 50th land acquisition is the only 50th such acquisition, I believe, in the nation, which, considering that chapter's been around since 86, it's not unexpected that they've reached that. But it is not for a lack of effort, because Scott spoke at the roundtable this year. I don't know if you caught that, but he had a lot of stories, and they've had successes. But as he said then, and he said in the story that Tori McCormick wrote, you almost prepare yourself for failure and you really celebrate the victories. And considering that they've done this in southwestern Minnesota's ag country, it's pretty impressive. And knowing Scott, I mean, you don't find too many guys that are as driven yet as personable in terms of knowing who to talk to, when to talk to them, and getting these things done. So it doesn't surprise me at all that they reached this milestone recently.
Yeah, Scott and that chapter have accomplished remarkable things. I mean, 50 chapters spread across a relatively small area. Yeah, it's a county, but that starts to make a difference on the landscape. There's a lot of folks hunting pheasants down there that are having an improved experience, a better experience, probably on a lot of adjacent private lands, not just those specific parcels, thanks to the work that those folks are doing.
For sure. And as a person who's a volunteer for a conservation group and has a banquet that maxes out around 120, which is kind of what we shoot for, we're all 14 of the committee members are overwhelmed, including myself. And then to see that this chapter normally sells out 500 ticket fundraising banquet is really impressive. I don't know where they have that in Worthington. That's a really big event in the whole scheme of conservation chapter fundraisers like that. So congratulations on that too.
They got a great rapport with their community. So congratulations to those guys. Cool. All right, Tim, thanks. Talk to you later.
Yep. Sounds good.
Tim Spielman at Outdoor News. Let's break. We'll check in with DNR Commissioner Sarah Stroman when we return. This is Outdoor News Radio.
Okay, who's ready to fish? Fleet Farm's all stocked and ready to go with the hottest brands to help you gear up for the season. Like the latest lines and lures from Berkley, Fluger rods and reels, Northland Tackle bobbers and bait, all sorts of Senko worms, the best in fish finders from Humminbird, Lowrance, and Garmin, St. Croix rods, new releases from Abu Garcia, and more. Stop in and check out the latest fishing gear from all your favorite brands at the best prices guaranteed at Fleet Farm.
Since 1937, Ducks Unlimited has been dedicated to conserving waterfowl habitat, from breeding grounds and migration routes to southern wintering areas. Thanks to the efforts of our volunteers and supporters, we've conserved millions of acres. However, our work is far from over. You can be part of our next million-acre year. Visit ducks.org/volunteer to join the team making a real difference. Ducks Unlimited, conservation for a continent.
You're out here to catch fish, not chase eggs and milk around the woods. Chef Robert's Gourmet Breading Mix is built for the outdoors. One step, no mess, no fuss. Just wet it, bread it, fry it, and get ready for the crunch that legends are made of. Grab a 12-ounce resealable bag and feed the whole crew. Fish, chicken, turkey, duck, and more. Find Chef Robert's at chefroberts.com, that's chefroberts.com, and never miss a bite.
Get ready for the ultimate outdoors and family adventure, Game Fair 2025. America's original since 1982, Game Fair runs six big days, August 8th, 9th, and 10th, and August 15th, 16th, and 17th, at the Armstrong Ranch in Ramsey. Try your hand at archery, test the latest hunting gear, and bring your dog for field demos and competitions. Game Fair 2025, where the outdoors comes to life. More info and tickets at gamefair.com.
Every 2 seconds, someone special needs blood. A friend, a family member, a coworker. Someday, it could be you. In fact, right now, patients in local hospitals are relying on Memorial Blood Centers to be there with the blood they need to survive. And that means we're relying on you to step up and make a life-saving difference. Make a date to help save a life. Visit mbc.org today to make an appointment to donate blood. That's mbc.org.
When it comes to a gun suicide attempt, all it takes is a moment.
My son, Ricky, took his life by the use of a firearm. It broke me, and I contemplated suicide. My grandson, I was going to have to be here for him. I still own my firearm. I keep it in a safe because I want to keep my grandson and myself safe.
Store your guns locked, unloaded, and away from ammo. Hear more safe stories at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by Brady and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everybody. Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Dreeseline. Very special guest joining us for a segment or two here today. It's DNR Commissioner Sarah Stroman. Sarah, welcome to the broadcast. You've been in the job for over 6 years now, right?
Well, first of all, hi, Rob. And yes, it has been about 6.5 years. And some days it feels like it, and some days it feels like it was just yesterday.
I looked at the list of commissioners over the years, and there were a couple that put in 12 years. Joe Alexander's probably the most recent one. There was another one in the middle portion of the 20th century, like around the 1950s. Then there's quite a few that did 4 years. And, you know, then there's a couple, you know, like you in that kind of that 6 to 8 year range. You're definitely have established yourself as one of our most seasoned commissioners, you might say.
Yeah, well, I will say it's an incredible honor to serve in this role. I mean, as someone who's spent a career in the natural resources, being able to not only work for, but play this leadership role for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, it's very humbling. We have an incredible staff all across the state. And as you know, Minnesotans are really passionate about the outdoors. And so getting to hear that and see that every single day truly is an honor. So glad to still be here.
Well, we just wrapped up a legislative session not that long ago, a month, 6 weeks ago, something like that. And any highlights from the 2025 session that you would like to mention? There were some policy items that we reported at Outdoor News. Sometimes that's not what's most important, right? Sometimes it's more about budget things and you know, the dollars that the agency gets. Any highlights you'd want to note before we move on to other topics?
Obviously, this was an unusual session. We got under a late start. We had a very unique power arrangement in the Minnesota legislature, but ultimately it turned out really well for Minnesota DNR. And, you know, there were a few policy items that survived, not all the ones we went into session with. But I think importantly, we have a really solid budget for the agency. We actually got operating increases, and those are really important to make sure that we keep pace with increasing costs of doing business for inflation, and makes it so that we can keep the services we provide and the work that we do at the same level as in the past. And so, you know, it isn't the most exciting thing, as you noted, it's not the thing that makes headlines, but it is critical for us to do that work that is important to Minnesotans. So that was a huge win. And in that came a couple fee increases. And then hopefully we'll talk about a really exciting opportunity related to a new outdoor recreation endorsement.
One policy item that came through is the continuous bass season. Folks are going to be able to fish bass year-round. Now, they're probably going to be catch and release seasons or a catch and release season within that overall strategy. Your son and husband, I believe, are big bass fishermen. They're pretty excited about that?
Yeah. You know, they're among a lot of bass folks who are excited about this opportunity. And I think really the change was driven by a number of the folks who have been deeply involved in the high school bass program and recognized what an opportunity that program has been and that bass fishing generally has been to engage younger people in the sport of angling, and a recognition that Minnesota was a bit unique and that we didn't have a year-round opportunity. Bass season is closed, you know, similar to walleye and pike. So in order to change it and have a catch and release opportunity, which is the plan for that period that has been historically closed, that period would become catch and release. And then the season would continue to open as it does now. It needs both a statute and a rule change. And so the statutory piece was changed this session. It was kind of a late breaking issue, but had very strong support among legislators. And as I said, among the bass angling community. So that piece is done. And our fisheries team is now working on the rule piece that's needed to align the rule with the intent of that statute change. But it'll essentially allow for a catch and release period from, you know, that end of February to beginning of May time period that's closed now.
So as we're talking right now, and again, this isn't locked up, you could still keep bass during the winter. They're not a species that's super active in the winter, but I've caught a fair number of bass through the ice. So that would remain in place. Is the goal to try to get this in place for 2026?
I think that's the goal. You know, rules always seem to take longer. There's a lot of complexity to make sure you get it right. I think the specifics, that's at least as I understand what folks are thinking now. So yes, that's the hope that it'll be in place, but I'm not the one writing the rule, so I'm never going to guarantee the timing, but hopefully folks will be able to see that soon, because I know there's a lot of excitement, a lot of chatter about it.
You listen to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisan chatting with DNR Commissioner Sarah Stroman. Okay, let's talk about maybe another goal for 2026, the old electronic licensing system update. This has been underway for a while. I remember one of your DNR leaders at a roundtable a couple of years ago, Sarah, saying something along the lines of, the ELS system is old enough to drink. It's over 20, 21 years old, and it was time to update it. There's been some fits and starts with this process, hasn't there?
Yeah. You know, large IT projects, I don't think it matters what space you're in. They're always a challenge. It's a unique industry. Our goal in Minnesota, and I think this is really important, Minnesota, following the experience that many Minnesotans will remember with the driver's license system, we have a really thorough process now for vetting new large systems that a lot of Minnesotans rely on. And the testing piece of it is really critical. And so you are absolutely right. We had hoped to go live earlier this year. That was the initial plan. As we got closer and into some of that preliminary testing, there were just some things that weren't working as we'd hoped. And so we made the decision to get everything fixed and make sure it's meeting Minnesotans' expectations from day one. And so really, I think we've sort of flipped from a date-driven approach to one that is criteria-based, and we will launch it when those success criteria are met. I know I am super excited for that system to launch as a user of it, not only for licensing, but for recreational vehicle registration too.
Sarah, on this program, I have said multiple times that, you know, as someone involved in a business that has had to update many forms of software, I am totally sympathetic to how challenging that process can be. That said, in this case, you are using a vendor that's unfurled it in other states, right? And I threw out the concept, you know, can't you just swap in the name Minnesota for Michigan and this plug and chug? Or is it not quite that simple?
I wish it were that simple, and it's just not. Minnesota, we have a very large system. You know, I think in terms of like the number of users, both in terms of the number of users as well as the number of products. If you think of all of the different kinds of licenses you could buy, just even think about a fishing license, right? There's a multi-day, there's the annual, there's an annual resident, non-resident, the spouse license. And so that number of products is up there. It's much more complicated than other states. I think we're like in the realm of California and Texas, very large population states, rather than in the realm of some of those other states. So, you know, it has to be tailored to the products we sell here. And then of course the vehicle registration piece is different too. And, you know, we're up there in terms of number of boats registered, number of ATVs, snowmobiles, all of those kinds of things that people register through that system too. And all of that has to be uniquely tailored. And then the other thing that's different here is the vendor that we've been using for the last, you know, number of decades on the current system is different than the vendor. And so all of that data has to be migrated from one to the other. And that sounds simple, and I'm not a technology person, but I have come to learn what sounds simple actually is not, to make sure it all translates correctly and that people's information isn't lost. There's, of course, private data like people's social security numbers tied to that. So there's all of that security aspect to it. And so it is complicated. And again, our focus is on making sure that complication stays behind the scenes with us and our vendor, and that when it rolls out, when Minnesotans go to register a vehicle or buy their license, it is a very simple, streamlined process.
Before we go to break, Sarah, one other technology question, and that's involving an on-the-water form of technology, forward-facing sonar, and the potential impacts that's having on our fisheries and bag limits. We've been talking about this for a couple of years now, pretty steady. We are seeing the DNR propose lower bag limits. There are some of the outdoor writers out there, maybe Rob Gerisan is Exhibit A, making too big of a deal of this, or is forward-facing sonar driving some of these discussions behind the scenes, you know, at the DNR for, you know, why we need to consider changing limits? We changed the perch limit on Mille Lacs at the end of the winter this year, and I don't think that's any secret that forward-facing sonar played a big role in the pressure that we put on those jumbo perch there this winter. Any quick thoughts before we go to break?
I mean, I think there's no doubt that forward-facing sonar and that kind of technology is one of the factors. There are others. Social media is another one, right? You can very quickly communicate where the fish are biting and people can flock to it. You know, we're seeing other changes in behavior with ice fishing. You know, people can sit out on the ice much longer if you're in a heated wheelhouse than if you're sitting on a bucket out in the elements. So I don't want to place all of the blame at the feet of technology. I think there are a number of changes, but it certainly is one of the things that we are watching very closely and definitely one of the factors we considered in the proposal for the lower walleye bag limits.
There is a technology working group, correct, that DNR's got cooking within fisheries. So it is something you're trying to investigate. And there's the study, of course, up on Leech Lake involving muskies.
Yeah, there's the muskie study on Leech Lake that we're participating in with MinFish and Bemidji State. We have other folks across our fisheries who are doing research on that and following the research. So it's definitely something to watch. I mean, it's like any, you know, we live in a technology-based society, and I've seen some of the discussion that talks about banning technology. I think that's very difficult if you thought about banning people from using a cell phone. That's probably unrealistic, but I think we do obviously need to consider what are the impacts on the resources, what are the tools that we have to help manage that, and one of them is bag limits.
Commissioner Stroman, you'll stick around for another segment?
I will be happy to.
DNR Commissioner Sarah Stroman, stick around. More Outdoor News Radio after these messages.
Rapala's X-Rap is back, and it's bolder than ever with all new colors that light up the strike zone. From its legendary slash bait action to its classic Rapala wobble, the X-Rap's versatility puts you in control, whether you're ripping it fast or pausing for that perfect suspend. With long cast precision, flash foil tails, and hand-tuned, tank-tested performance, it's no wonder the X-Rap hooks pros and weekend warriors alike. Now available in all new must-have colors. Find your next go-to at Rapala.com or your favorite fishing retailer.
You fish the same waters year after year. But what if your next best fishing story is just a few miles away? Onyx Fish builds on 15 years of experience, giving hunters and adventurers a revolutionary angling tool to help you find new water, new access, and new fish. Find the right lake. Know the species, size, and abundance. Get expert local insight. Navigate to the right ramp fast. Then go fish in new lakes like they're your home waters. Don't chase reports. Make your own with Onyx Fish.
Okay, who's ready to fish? Fleet Farm's all stocked and ready to go with the hottest brands to help you gear up for the season. Like the latest lines and lures from Berkley, Fluger Rods and Reels, Northland Tackle Bobbers and Bait, all sorts of Senko Worms, the best in fish finders from Humminbird, Lowrance, and Garmin, St. Croix Rods, new releases from Abu Garcia, and more. Stop in and check out the latest fishing gear from all your favorite brands at the best prices guaranteed at Fleet Farm.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
The Outdoor News Foundation is dedicated to nurturing the next generation of outdoor enthusiasts. Through your generous donations, we provide youth with access to OutdoorNews.com, educational scholarships, and grants. Every dollar donated goes directly to connecting young people with nature and outdoor activities. Help us cast a legacy for the next generation of outdoor enthusiasts and conservation leaders. Visit OutdoorNews.com to get involved, learn more, and donate today.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you prevent wildfires.
Dude, I've got this. I've been camping since I was 5 years old.
But I am a camping influencer.
You know what? I'll bet you $5. Assistant Smokey, what is the best way to put out a campfire?
To put out a campfire, drown with water, stir, drown again, then make sure the fire is out cold by feeling with the back of your hand.
Wait, really?
I'll take the $5.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Everybody, welcome back to the broadcast Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Gerislein. Very happy to have DNR Commissioner Sarah Stroman with us for a couple segments this week. She's carved out some time for us. We talked about how the latest legislative session wrapped up for most of the previous segment. Let's talk about some other issues on my mind here. First of all, Sarah, that Get Out More initiative that started, was that in 2023? Was that kind of part of the big surplus year? That's still happening. Tell us a little bit about that and some of those priorities.
Yeah, that continues to be, I think, one of the most exciting things I've seen in my tenure as commissioner, you know, both the opportunity for Minnesota to have that surplus and then the opportunity for DNR to capture some of that to make some generational investments in the outdoors that Minnesotans will not only be able to see with their eyes, but, you know, experience. And so we've been undertaking significant investments in a variety of modernizing outdoor recreation experiences, from camping and trail opportunities in state parks to accessibility equipment like the track chairs and other facilities in state parks to more shore fishing opportunities, improving our boat ramps and also improving fish hatcheries. So there's been a lot of work underway, mostly planning that first year. And then this year, there's a lot of construction happening. Number of boat ramps are now complete, from Sturgeon Lake in Pine County to Madison Lake near Mankato. We just opened up a huge new accessibility project at William O'Brien State Park that's really exciting. If folks have not been to that, you know, near Metro State Park for a while, I was pretty impressed. I haven't been there since the construction was done. And, you know, just because it is accessible for people with physical disabilities, it's actually better for everyone. It makes it more accessible for everyone. So really incredible work. There's a lot of new shore fishing opportunities around the state. And then we've been doing a lot of design work, particularly on the Waterville hatchery, and excited to see that construction start probably in the next year.
I know this isn't necessarily linked to the Get Out More initiative, but that new Keystone Woods WMA, you got to be pretty excited about that. Great new piece of public land, stone's throw from the Metro.
It's amazing. And, you know, it's not that far from William O'Brien State Park. And to have that kind of wildlife opportunity that close to the Metro is incredible. I've been out there a couple times since we acquired it. And I know it gets a lot of good use, and appreciate, you know, the public's been weighing in on what kind of development and how much we should do out there. And very excited. Anytime we can add public land to the base here in Minnesota, it's a good thing.
What is that, like 1,800 acres, I think? Like I say, just north of the Metro. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's significant. And it really, you know, very high quality habitat, despite it being used as a cattle farm for many years. Just a huge piece of undeveloped property. And I know nonprofit conservation partners were critical in helping us acquire that property. They'd had their eyes on it for years.
Another priority of your administration has been the For the Outdoors initiative, trying to come up with some longer term funding options for the agency, kind of getting beyond just hunting and fishing licenses and other user fees, I think was the general idea. Is anything new with that? It seems like I haven't heard much about it since probably before the session. Any updates you'd like to share?
I would. We hit a huge milestone this legislative session with some energy around one idea that we're calling our outdoor recreation endorsement. And it's really a pretty simple idea, but one that, you know, we haven't used in Minnesota. Other states have used it. And the idea is, rather than purchasing your state park vehicle permit at a park and sticking it on the front windshield of your car, Minnesotans can have the opportunity to purchase what we're calling an outdoor recreation endorsement that will serve as state park and recreation area entrance at the time you register your passenger vehicle or as you renew it. And so what that opportunity does is it actually gets us in front of many Minnesotans. We have a high number of vehicles registered in the state. And based on the adoption rate we've seen from other states, we believe, you know, we can get a fair number of folks opting into that. We know people in Minnesota support conservation, and we can actually lower the fee per person then to get that and recoup the money we get off those park vehicle permits and generate actually additional revenue that can go back into operation of conservation and outdoor
So I understand. I buy a new vehicle, and when I'm going through the process of buying my license plates or whatever, he's going to ask if I want to buy a permanent state park entrance endorsement?
So it will either happen there or on the annual basis when you go to renew your tabs and you get the new sticker that says 26, 27, whatever year it is, there will be a checkbox that says, do you want to get the outdoor recreation endorsement for an additional $19? It will get you into state parks. And
that's a really good idea.
It's a really good idea, right? It's really simple. And states like Michigan and Colorado have used this to great success. And Minnesota has not. So that is our idea. It actually got a lot of legislative interest this session. They and we were not ready to fully implement it. We obviously have to work with DPS and DVS on that implementation side of it. But the legislature did require us to come back with the specifics of proposal.
A quick point that I've discussed with some other folks kind of going in another direction here now is I know youth recruitment's important to you and recruitment of folks of all ages to the outdoors is important to you. I think, I don't know if you have spoken about this or if I've written about it, but getting a young person enrolled in a firearm safety class is challenging. I got really lucky and found a slot for my daughter out at an event in Victoria. I think I just stumbled into it because I found it like the day it posted. Are you hearing that from other folks? And is this becoming a limiting factor to getting folks in? We're trying to make it easier for kids. They're doing it online. That's as simple as it can be. But they got to have that field day. Man, how do we make that easier? How do we get more field days, I guess, going for these kids?
Yeah, I think it's a really important question. It comes up from time to time. You know, I think some parts of the state where there are very active, like there might be a Pheasants Forever chapter or a Deer Hunters chapter that has sort of adopted firearm safety programs in a geographic area. They may have fewer challenges than others, but our model is really one that is limited by the number of volunteers that we get to offer those field days. And I think it's like a lot of things, you know, in state government and the DNR in particular, that the way we have always done things worked well for a certain amount of time. And particularly as I think any effort or organization that relies on volunteer labor is going through some of those challenges. So I think it's a multi-pronged strategy to continue to recruit volunteers, but it's probably also something where we need to think about maybe modernizing the way that we deliver that training and thinking outside the box a little bit.
Yeah, I think there's an opportunity to try to reevaluate the model a little bit, Sarah, because it's a bottleneck. It seems to be getting worse, which in some ways is a good thing. We've got a lot of kids. We've got more young girls getting involved, and in the metro area, I think that's maybe contributing to it, and that's a good problem to have. Before we go, a couple other quick questions for you, Commissioner. A year or two ago, we had the land swap, or the state park that the Upper Sioux Band took over. There was some concern about that, a big chunk of public land going off the books to another management entity. Anything like that in the works right now that I don't want to be surprised? Is the DNR involved with any talk of transferring any other state public lands to the bands or anybody else?
We don't have anything on that scale. You know, your listeners are probably aware of the proposals that have come from Red Lake Nation and White Earth Nation. We are not actively engaged. Those have been proposed. The only things that are active are specific parcels. And these are things historically we've done. For example, a parcel of school trust land in the Bena area that Leech Lake Band is interested in. Transferring that would resolve a trespass situation. It is not land we are actively using. It is a smaller parcel and makes sense. We have another similar situation with Mille Lacs Band, again, school trust land that is intended to resolve a long-standing trespass situation there. And those both went through the legislature this session, but they are, you know, one parcel transfers, nothing larger.
Acreage-wise, do you any idea what we're talking?
Oh, I don't, but they're small. Mm-hmm. They're small.
And finally, Commissioner, you know, we're always watching for those field positions, those fish and wildlife positions, you know, in the field offices. We hear sometimes that, you know, there's positions that are open. Are there any issues with dollars for those positions right now? You talked earlier about the legislature having a good session, operating revenue being in pretty good shape. Are you satisfied with how quickly you're able to fill fish and wildlife positions and other positions within the agency?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, we're a large agency. We have a large number of employees. And so at any one time, we have a large number of vacancies. And some of those are by design, and some of them are intended to be filled. I think total we have 30 some positions advertised right now on the state career website. I think one of those I would classify in the fish and wildlife field position. I think there are a couple in that division. And, you know, I'll say I think we've been doing overall pretty well at filling positions. I know they don't always go as fast as people would like, but there's a process that the state has, and we go through that. But as far as dollars, no, you know, we have the dollars to fill those positions. And I think, you know, as I said, we came out well in the session getting those operating increases. And I know a lot of folks, I'm certainly one of them. I'm a huge advocate for general fund investment in the outdoors and in the DNR. But right now, when we're in a general fund deficit kind of situation, being reliant on other sources of funding is not a bad thing. So, you know, I think we will buffer the downturn a little bit better than some others.
DNR Commissioner Sarah Stroman, thank you for spending a couple segments with me. You will be out at Game Fair, right? On is it Friday, August 8th? You always try to get out there the first Friday of Game Fair, right?
I do. I got to get out there the very first day and get my shore lunch and make the rounds to talk with Ron Scherer and Chuck Delaney and all of our partners that are out there. And of course, to see the dogs. So very excited to be out there that first Friday.
Great. Yeah, it's coming up here in just a couple weeks. So we will see you out there. Thanks so much for joining me for this week's show, and have a great rest of your summer.
Thanks, Rob. You too.
Yeah, DNR Commissioner Sarah Stroman, we appreciate her carving out time for our broadcast. With that, let's grab a break. More of the program after these messages.
Welcome to Crush City, where the fish are big and the bite is hot. Rapala, the world's number one lure brand, is bringing its legendary lifelike action to soft plastics. Crush City baits are already making waves in tournament circles, and now they're ready for your waters. Whether you're trolling shad wraps, casting X wraps, or shaking the Crush City mooch minnow, get out on the water and share your success with Rapala. Find yours today at your local fishing retailer or rapala.com.
You fish the same waters year after year. But what if your next best fishing story is just a few miles away? Onyx Fish builds on 15 years of experience, giving hunters and adventurers a revolutionary angling tool to help you find new water, new access, and new fish. Find the right lake. Know the species, size, and abundance. Get expert local insight. Navigate to the right ramp fast. Then go fish in new lakes like they're your home waters. Don't chase reports. Make your own with Onyx Fish.
Join the team that is making a real difference. Ducks Unlimited is powered by people like you. With your help, we can continue to raise funds that drive wetlands conservation across the continent. Whether you are out selling event tickets, securing donations, or finding that next sponsor, we have a role for everyone. Sign up today to join your local DU chapter at ducks.org/volunteer or attend your local DU event. Ducks Unlimited, conservation for a continent.
Get ready for the ultimate outdoors and family adventure, Game Fair 2025. America's original since 1982, Game Fair runs 6 big days, August 8th, 9th, and 10th, and August 15th, 16th, and 17th at the Armstrong Ranch in Ramsey. Try your hand at archery, test the latest hunting gear, and bring your dog for field demos and competitions. Game Fair 2025, where the outdoors comes to life. More info and tickets at gamefair.com.
Spring and summer are prime time for ticks that can spread Lyme disease and other infections. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention would like to remind you to wear bug repellent when outdoors, shower as soon as possible after coming indoors, and check your whole body for ticks every day. If you've been bitten by a tick and develop fever, rash, or fatigue, seek medical care. To learn more, visit www.cdc.gov/Lyme.
The shooting sports, both hunting and target, are lifetime recreational activities enjoyed by millions of Americans. Hi, this is DNR Conservation Officer Adam Block. The Minnesota DNR Hunter Education Program was designed to improve safety and to develop an attitude of respect for wildlife and the environment. For more information, call 800-366-8917.
Welcome back, everybody, Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Gerisline. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to have Tim Lesmeister with us here in just a moment. Read Tim at OutdoorNews.com or in the print version. Call us at 800-535-5191. Or again, you can subscribe to either print or digital at OutdoorNews.com. Tim, welcome. It's good to see you. We had a number of interesting headlines in this week's print edition of Outdoor News. For starters, you got a bear attack over there in Wisconsin, huh?
Yeah, you know, that is a very rare situation, but this woman actually got attacked while she was in her yard. And I think that there was a cub involved. And we all know that sometimes bears get protective when they have cubs around. I had a black bear come through my backyard here up on Madeline Island just yesterday. And I don't do anything when they come through my yard. I just look at them. I don't yell at them. I don't, you know, bears this time of year can be real unpredictable because of the cubs. So I just kind of leave them alone. And I know that there have been videos on YouTube of people yelling at bears, and then the bears get very aggressive. So I don't know what happened here. All I know is that a woman was attacked by a black bear. And I think that it's very a good idea to be very cautious this time of year and don't try to get them aggravated by yelling, throwing things, or doing stuff that just makes no sense.
Dateline Comstock, Wisconsin. The woman was 69 years old. The DNR earlier this week, I don't know if it's changed in the past couple of days, but earlier this week, the Wisconsin DNR saying preliminary findings, including information from her family, suggest the bear exhibited a sustained series of aggressive behaviors towards the victim. I'm not exactly sure what that means, if it was hanging around and it wouldn't leave kind of thing. Usually they'll leave, right? I mean, you know, if there's commotion around a house, bears get the message and clear out. Anytime you got a cub involved, though, all bets are off. And this was, you know, pretty much due east of the Twin Cities, I believe. And we've been talking about bears moving further and further south, taking over new areas. The Star Tribune had a number of stories about a wayward black bear out in western Minnesota. It's like, no, it's not really wayward. It's just living outdoors like bears do. I think we better get used to seeing bears in more areas. I think people have become more tolerant of them. But when you got an aggressive one like this, I don't know if the DNR can track it down, if they'll remove it. They just might.
I've had a lot of interaction with bears over the years up in the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness up in Alaska. What I've discovered is that you just have to remain calm. You have to, you know, basically look at what attitude the bear is showing you. And it's, if they're going to be aggressive, you have to move slowly. You have to back off slowly. In the Boundary Waters, one time we had a bear with two cubs, kept wanting to try to get into our camp. And she was showing not an, what I would call an aggressive behavior towards us. I think she just wanted to get in at the food. I mean, when you're cooking bacon in the morning, you know, the bears can smell that and they want to figure out a way to get in there. And so just keep your eyes peeled when you have a bear around. And go inside. Don't stand out there, try to take pictures and interact with the bear. Just get into an area that, well, you have some protection with some walls or, you know, near a lake, near your canoes, if you're in the Boundary Waters. Sometimes we would actually close the stove, grab our pots and pans, walk down, wash them in the water, jump in our canoes with the pots and pans, and then just head out for a while until they left. Don't interact with those bears.
We will probably know more about that story next week, so stay tuned. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Dreesen and Tim Lesmeister winding things down. I wrote part of my column this week, Tim, about another national issue. I've been doing that a lot lately. I probably need to write about some more local issues, but there's been a lot going on in D.C., and I wanted to point out, you know, we've talked a lot about the public lands issues. We've talked a lot about, or some about the roadless issues, and in my opinion, the national outdoors media has almost completely ignored that. But on July 3rd, President Trump signed an executive order establishing the Make America Beautiful Again Commission. Its stated purpose, the U.S. is blessed with vast, beautiful landscapes, abundant resources, rich heritage of discovery by travelers and outdoorsmen. America's national parks, forests, waterways, and public lands have inspired generations. To ensure that the next generation of Americans inherits the same sense of duty and adventure, my administration will prioritize conserving our great American national parks and outdoor recreation areas. Okay, that sounds great. It's not real consistent with some of the other actions we've seen from the administration, but I guess we'll take what we can get, huh?
America is beautiful already. And so this MABA should not be Make America Beautiful Again. It should be Maintain America's Beauty, all right? Because if you look at what this administration did early on, was it went across the board and just cut jobs everywhere. I have a niece out in Washington State whose husband worked for the National Park Service. He's not there anymore. They all got laid off. So we want to maintain America's beauty. It's already beautiful. I think that what we need to do is we need to make sure that we're fully staffed at our national parks. We need to make sure that we maintain status quo where we have a lot of income that is being produced by these resources. It's not there if the people aren't there to maintain what we already have. So you're not making America beautiful again. It's already beautiful.
Yeah, and I wrote a column about this earlier this year when Elon Musk and his Doge was slashing and burning all sorts of federal jobs. I know a number of people who lost their job as part of that. You know, National Park staff was down already before Donald Trump was elected again for his second term. And to really double down and slash and burn more jobs within our national parks, and not just national parks, a lot of these federal resource agencies, that's the action. I mean, words are great. Executive orders declaring let's make America beautiful again are wonderful. But, you know, actions speak louder than words, I guess, is the old saying. You know, there were some outdoor groups out there that applauded this. And I guess I'll let people read the whole executive order for themselves. Just go to whitehouse.gov. You can click through under news and then presidential actions and then take a look at that July 3rd order. You know, I had one conservationist, Tim, tell me, you know, there's a lot of executive orders that, that the president signs that don't go anywhere. This is probably going to be one of those. But you know, I'll try to look at the glass half full. I appreciate this administration even considering natural resources, given its not so good report card so far on issues important to us.
Yeah, I'll applaud this initiative and I hope that it makes things better. But I think that what we have to do is we have to look at maintaining the glorious resources that we have in the United States of America. Let's not mess with a formula that already works.
Finally, Tim, we had a pretty good commentary about the boundary waters and basically how screwed up that lottery permit system is. We got all kinds of people hopping on immediately. As soon as they can reserve permits, they're reserving a half a dozen permits. They're either no shows or they're canceling a few days before when no one else can use the permit. The Forest Service needs to figure that out.
They think that maybe they can raise the cost of the permit and that people will, you know, feel sad about losing that money. Take it up to $40. That's not high enough, but if you raise it too high, then you have a lot of people that can't afford to go right. And use that resource. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's a conundrum here that maybe there's no solution for except to educate people to cancel your permit well in advance.
Right.
Then someone else can actually use it. There should be a stipulation on there that if you don't cancel, they keep your credit card on file or whatever. And if you do not cancel your permit, let's say 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or a month before you know you're not going to use it, then you will be penalized. And that should be what is substantial. Because then people will go in there, they will cancel that permit, and then somebody else will get to use it.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And no shows also, right? If you don't use the permit, you're going to get hit with an extra $20 or something like that.
Oh, I'd say make it a whole lot higher than that. No shows are the worst. Yeah. At least if someone cancels well enough in advance, somebody's going to pick up that permit and they're going to use it. Cancellations are fine. You know, go ahead and book that permit and cancel it if you don't go. But if you're a no-show, you're bad. We don't like you.
Well, canceling it 2 days before the permit isn't a whole lot better than a no-show.
That's true.
We'll see if the Forest Service listens to our advice. I think that's a good point you brought up, Tim. Thanks for joining me for a segment. Have a good week.
We'll catch up to you soon.
Thank you to the Tims. Thank you to Sarah Stroman who joined us. Everybody have a great week out of doors. Rob Gerisline signing off for Outdoor News Radio. Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.